How's it going, everybody? Welcome to the Dead Jester Productions podcast, episode number 221. I'm your host, Josh or Jim Oscars, joined this week by a special guest, Quinn Q, author, scriptwriter. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Happy to have you here. Very excited to chat a little bit here. Why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself? What does you do? What you got going on?
Absolutely. So like you said, I'm a writer. I have a variety of projects that have only made it to pre-production or pre-pro for short, in terms of like the development stage of scripts and movies. I haven't made anything to television yet. I'm trying. That's probably like my next big target would be get something. I mean, obviously either way works, but get something in terms of maybe like a staff position at a TV show, or at the very least get some juice on a pilot. But besides scripts, I also have dabbled with prose in terms of some short form poetry and other more like bookish content. I have some irons in the fire in that regard, but nothing I can really hang my hat on yet. But the goal for this year is to get a few more scripts finished, including a script project that I'm working on for the month of April. I'm doing an entire script from start to finish in the month of April, and you can follow the progress for that on my Twitter account, Edoquin, at Edoquin, E-D-O-K-W-I-N. Other than that, nothing I can really talk about yet, but the goal, like I said, is to get something to the finish line, whether that's a script or book or a credit on an actual project that people will be able to see or read sometime this year.
Awesome. That's awesome. No, it's one of the main things I mentioned on the last episode I recorded was how I wanted to focus more on my writing. So I was very excited when you reached back out to me and mentioned that you were a scriptwriter, author, very into writing. I was like, perfect. We've got a lot of authors and writers of different sorts on the show, and I always thoroughly enjoy chatting with people because it's something I enjoy. So it makes it way easier for me to connect. And no, I'm excited to have you here.
Well, thank you for having me.
I have a question about script writing for you before we jump right in. When you go into it, are you focused on do you have a specific project in mind, like a story you're trying to tell? Not necessarily like the actual plot line, but like genre wise, do you sometimes think, oh, this is something that's in high demand, maybe I'll focus on this? And the reason I ask is because we had a film producer on a couple years ago, and it changed the way I view filmmaking to an extent where they make films based on demand and like retroactively come up with like scripts and things like that, where it's like, oh, what do you guys need? You need a horror film. Okay, we'll make you another horror film, and so on and so forth. So I was curious where you get the ideas for your scripts from.
Right. Well, it's different when you're a writer. And so I was going to say, thankfully, I'm more in the position of, I don't chase the market. I think this is the saying in that regard, like chasing the market is like chasing a dog chasing a car or something like that. So I try to pay attention to what's going on. So if there is a signal or if there are there's like little industry prompts or industry feelers that they put out to kind of tell people like, hey, we're accepting, you know, pitches in regards to this, that, or the other. And so if those align with stuff that I already have that I'm working on, or preferably that I already have finished in the drawer, so to speak, then that's great. In general, I write on spec, which is very frustrating sometimes because it feels like you're doing it for nothing because you don't have it sold, or even you don't necessarily know where it's going to go, except again, like literally metaphorically in a drawer somewhere. But it's nice when those things align, but I'm never really writing to the market or writing to demand, because what can happen when you do that is you heard, okay, so let's just say CBS wants a, you know, hard comedy, whatever that means. And then you spend anywhere from 3 to 6 months working on a pilot. And like, as there's a difference between like writing the script or writing out like what you're going to do versus trying to actually get it made. And a lot of people do like make pilots on spec, which is a crazy process because it's a lot of time and money and production that, you know, may turn out to be nothing. You could do all that and then you find out, that time is bust. The time for hard comedy is bust. I'm doing a reference to, nobody's probably going to get. That's like a Breaking Bad reference. That time is bust. No 50,000 for you. And so actually Better Call Saul. But and it's like, oh man, we did this and all for nothing. So usually I will just like pay attention to what the feelers are saying people might be more interested in talking about or buying and compare that with what I already have. But I'm very rarely writing something based on what I was told people are interested in, because I feel like that way just leads to extra disappointment potentially. But other people are different. Other people also work faster.
You feel like you're constantly chasing something too, it would seem like.
Yeah. Other people also work faster. Like I tell people all the time, I tell myself, easy to work with, I'm responsible, I finish my deadlines, but I'm lazy, and writers and creative people by their nature tend to be lazy. So I don't love the idea of saying to myself, well, I have at most 6 months, more likely 3 months to try and like make this from scratch and then turn it around and get it out there versus like, it's already done. I might have to like polish it a little bit, maybe tweak it a little bit, but it's already done. Let's talk about it versus, oh man, from scratch. So that's the other thing. It's just like, I don't like the headache of having like literally like right now writing a script from scratch and like making a whole feature from nothing in a month is actually like making me pull my hair out at times. So, and that's even with like outlines and preparation. So I don't chase the market, but other people are different. So, you know, to each their own. I don't begrudge anybody their style, but for me, I can't do it.
Fair enough. Do you have any like, do you do any like writing exercises to just keep to like come up with ideas or just to keep yourself sharp? Like that's one of the things I do. I know they do it on Reddit where they have the like writing prompt, which I don't really do that often, but a lot of times I'll see or I'll think of something throughout the day and it's like, oh, that's a cool idea. And I put the note in my phone. And then at some other point when I have a few minutes of downtime, I'll just write out like a story outline, essentially. I don't know if you do something similar where you just have exercises you do to flesh out ideas or just write something in general.
Yeah. So outlines for sure. Sort of impromptu brainstorming sessions with myself, as weird or sad as that might sound. There have been, I mean, ideas are a dime a dozen, so I try not to be too precious about them, and I try to also generate as many as I can so that I have something to go to when I need it, when I actually do need to work on a full project for whatever reason. But yeah, I've done a variety of that. I did more of it, I would say, like about 2 years ago, because I was in a big kind of Reddit phase myself. And I was going on to different subs related to writing prompts and flash fiction and this and that. And so back then, for sure, these days less. Like I'll go through fits and spurts with Reddit. Like sometimes I'll be on there somewhat active for a few days and I'll like dip out for weeks or months at a time. I also just don't really love the Reddit platform. I don't have to go into a big discussing about that if we don't want to, but I'm not a huge fan. I mean, everybody has their preferences when it comes to social media, but I'm just not a huge fan of Reddit as a platform and as a company. So I tend to get burnt out on it pretty quickly and move back to what I know and what I like Twitter. You know, I don't call it the other thing because I just think that that's lame. I know it.
We have a standing order on the show here where it is Twitter. We don't call it anything else.
Yeah, exactly. Very appreciate it. Yeah, exactly. Same. But yeah, I've always loved Twitter and I just go to Twitter and like, I wish I had some more engagement there. I have a few mutuals and I have a few like devoted nominal fans. I really think of them more as friends, because like at my level, there's not really like a bunch of people, you know, banging down my door, metaphorically speaking, or asking for an autograph or whatever. But I just think that that's more my style. But yeah, as far as exercises go, these days it's basically just forcing myself as much as possible to get something done in regards to writing. If I was a little less lazy, I'd be making sure that I got a minimum of 8 pages on my script every day, on some kind of script every day, like reliably for at least 5 days a week. Plus, I'd make sure that I got like 2 articles on my Substack and probably some poems and some other stuff for my Patreon and just like stuff from my my spoken word sessions. But even just saying all that is a lot. And for other people, they might say, oh yeah, that sounds great. But then it's like, you actually have to do it. You actually have to sit down and do it. And that's where the hard part, it's easy to talk about it, but it's hard to actually do the thing. And talking about doing the thing is not doing the thing, as Chris Williamson says. So you just have to do what you can and forgive yourself when you fall short, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, I feel like it can be different. Like I said, I don't have really any experience writing scripts, but just writing in general, there's it. I run a writer's block all the time, for sure. Mm-hmm. Partially because I get pulled away and distracted by other projects. But how do you find the easiest way for you to stay focused on what you're working on? Is it just putting specific deadlines on yourself and things of that nature?
Well, the problem with self-imposed deadlines is they are self-imposed. It takes a lot of discipline and self-control to really hone in on those. Habits help. Daily practices help. So, for example, and again, it's easy to say versus do. So I'll be, you know, humble and say I don't always follow my own advice in this regard. But, and this is not even like my advice, like originated. Like I got this from somebody else. But write first thing in the morning. Like, obviously, when you wake up, you do whatever you need to do, bodily functions, go to the bathroom. If you literally feel like you can't function without eating something first, like within the first, let's say, 30 minutes of waking up, which is a little fast, a little early for me, I usually wait to have breakfast. Do that first. If you feel like you need to exercise, for example, do that first. Some people, you know, need to do their fasted cardio. No shade, no sweat, whatever. Or, you know, a lot of sweat in that case. But, but outside of everything that you feel like you have to do to function, that, you know, if you don't do that, you won't be able to think, you know, get your cup of coffee, whatever, just force yourself to sit at the computer or the typewriter or literally whatever you use, and or the pad and pen, and write for at least 30 minutes, preferably an hour. Just stare at that blank page. Hopefully it's not blank. Hopefully it has something left over that you're, you know, continuing, but stare at that, work at that, and then if you feel like you can continue after that first hour, continue. If you feel like you can't, pause it, do something else. But doing it the first thing in the morning, one of the reasons why is that procrastination is the ultimate enemy. And procrastination, the really like sort of insidious thing of procrastination is, especially if you have this thing that you feel like you need to do and you know that you could do it at any time throughout the day, and your day maybe is not as structured. Some people, a lot of people I'd say, who are like functioning adults with jobs and lives, their days tend to be a little bit more structured. They usually have appointments and this and that. They have to go to work, they have to go to school, they have to go to whatever. But if you like literally just have a whole day free, which is sometimes my life, it could be all the harder to really focus in. But either way, exactly. But either way, if you do it first thing in the morning, what happens is then it's out of the way. And also, then you don't, there's no excuse. There's no excuse not to. You can't say, well, you know, like, let's say, oh, I never remember why I was missing why you could be busy. Like I was saying, basically, it's important to have a routine. And one thing that really helps is if you start in the morning and then even if you're going to be busy later on in the day, like you have a job, you have to go to school, do whatever, then you've gotten it out of the way. First, you know, 30 minutes, first hour of writing, whatever, you've gotten out of the way. You can come back to it, you can do more later. But that, I think, is probably one of the biggest things that helps, is just getting to start as soon as possible after you wake up, because the longer you wait, the more you tend, the waiting kind of feeds on itself, builds on itself. And then again, if you have everything's going on in the day, like when I'm coming home from a day job, like let's say I'm working a restaurant gig or I'm working retail or, you know, hospitality or whatever, I might not be in the most, you know, creative mood, let's say. So it's better just get it done first thing in the morning.
Fair enough. Yeah, I can't imagine being able to do that. Unfortunately, I get up every day about 5:30. I come into the office, do my workouts, I check my emails and everything, get my shower, and then I leave. I don't get back home until, you know, a little after 4 o'clock, take care of the dog, get back to work for a couple more hours, make dinner. By the time my day is like caught up, it's like 8 o'clock.
Soon, 8 p.m.?
Soon we'll be able to. Yeah. Yeah, 8 p.m.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's a lot.
I'm 5 a.m. to 8 p.m. I'm looking forward to it, though. It's, yeah. Yeah, it's the life.
Yeah, no, I get it.
But you're probably the year, it should be a lot clearer, though. I'll have a much clearer schedule.
Yeah. It's tough. Like, you probably, you don't go into too many deals if you don't want to, but you're probably like a salaried employee. So it's like you just kind of show up and then you've got to do what you've got to do. But then there's always something that's sort of pulling you back to the office, pulling you back to your desk. Like there's always one more thing. So you can't ever really leave until you can leave. It's one of those things.
I'm kind of all over the place throughout the day. Not driving around so much, but to an extent, I'm just at my desk working on stuff. It's like, all right, let's get out of here. I gotta go. I do a lot of like photography and videography. So it's like at my desk, checking emails, editing some things, working on websites. And then it's like, time to go. I gotta go grab the videos right now. This is when we have it scheduled. So go get the videos and everything like that. Take some photos, back to the desk, edit these together and everything. So it's back and forth, which is why I mentioned doing the, like having the ideas, writing it in my notes on my phone and then expanding on it whenever I get downtime, which is usually like 5 to 10 minutes at a time every once in a while.
Oh, yeah, but, yeah. So for that kind of tight scheduling, it's harder for sure. I would say at that point, it's kind of like similar to the morning routine, but if not like first thing in the morning, you just have to schedule like time within your schedule. Like, yeah, as eloquent as I put it, you have to like make an appointment with yourself to do this thing. And you, like literally have to treat it as like a hard in and out where nothing else can interfere with that. And if somebody asks, like if you had a calendar, you had a Calendly or whatever, you know, app you might use, you or just anybody listening, you have to say that time is blocked off. You can't do anything else. You can't do phone calls. You can't do emails. You have to literally just say, I'm going to sit here and write for this hour, say. And then if nothing happens during an hour, if you feel blocked or whatever, then it is what it is. But at least you sat at your computer or you sat at the notepad, you sat at the typewriter, and you said, I'm going to try. Because that's really the main thing. A lot of people will just not even like commit to putting themselves in the position. They'll say like, it'd be a good idea, or I should do this. It'd be a good idea if I did that, but they'll never even put themselves in the position. Whereas like using the exercise analogy, if you go to the gym, like if you have a gym at your house or more commonly, if there's a gym that you have a membership to that's outside, if you physically go to that location, it's far more likely to actually get something done. If you physically, let's say to yourself, you physically sit down and like at a computer or at a desk and say, I'm going to write, it's more likely that you're going to write versus if you just say like, it'd be a good idea if, but then you don't, then you won't. So.
I'm chuckling to myself because I think there's a gym right down the street from where I live. And I don't know how many times I've been, like I'll walk by with the dog or something whenever I get home, and there's just like 4 or 5 people all just sitting there, like not even in like workout attire, like jeans and a t-shirt or something, just sitting there with like sodas. I'm like, this is a hangout spot, not a gym.
Oh, so like in the lobby. But
you're absolutely right, though. With the,
or are they in the cars in the parking lot?
Yeah. No, they're in the gym, which that's why it's okay. Funny to me. Like, you're absolutely correct in the sense of like going to a gym, you're more likely to actually work out or do it as opposed to having the home gym where it's like, you know, I'll do it later. It's so much easier to not do anything when it's so easy to avoid it. You know, if you get in your car and you drive to a gym, you're there, right? You look pretty, you're going to feel pretty foolish if you get there, go in the gym and then be like, never mind, and turn around and just leave. Especially if you're paying for the membership or whatever.
Membership.
Too.
Yes.
But it's about, I don't know why. I find it hilarious when these people are just sitting there doing nothing, drinking soda at a gym.
Sure. No, I mean, you know, depending on where you go, that could be the vibe. This could be like the nature of the place. But like in most of the cases, most of the places that I've been to, like, you know, full disclosure, I used to work at not work at. Maybe one day I'll work at a gym. It'd be good. That'd be another thing. Like, pro tip. No, this is like a real thing. It's like a thing in martial arts.
It's gotta be super motivational.
Well, yeah, like in martial arts culture, especially, like if you go to like a martial arts gym or a dojo, and you want to commit to it more, ask them if they'd be willing to take you on as like a part-time employee with like some kind of discount on your membership. And that will definitely get you committed, because then you're like, you know, you're mopping, you're cleaning, you're doing whatever, you're getting to know the staff there a little bit more. And it's like, you can't just half-ass it, so to speak, when you feel like you're part of the family, in a sense. You feel like, you know, it's just your home away from home, your third place or what have you. So that's
another, it always like, starts sort of, out as part-time. Next thing you know, you're over at their house, painting their fence, waxing their car, catching flies, going around the house.
well, you know, try not to, I mean,
taking unless people out of rubble.
Yeah, unless it's Mr. Miyagi and there's actually some lessons there, or, you know, Yoda, try not to get, you know, Tom Sawyered into, you know, just being their butler or their personal assistant. But I mean, like, if you can put yourself into positions where you're more likely to do the things that you need to do, that's really what it's about. Now, again, like, I could think of people who, quote unquote, write, but it's like they go to Starbucks every day, you know, and there's no shade on Starbucks or even coffee shops, which I've gone to myself, more for just like to actually sit and eat, or occasionally for the electricity and the Wi-Fi, but not necessarily to write per se. Like, I'm not that stereotypical, at least not yet, thankfully. I usually write at home, maybe the library.
You don't like to sit down and go, I'm an author.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not that cliche, not at this point in my life. But like, there are people who will do that, and it's like it's the aesthetic more than anything. And you know, also like I have difficulty getting things done when I'm around too many people. Like,
I was going to ask actually, because I when I was in college, I would go to Starbucks on campus and try and work on stuff, and I couldn't concentrate because there's too many people, especially like in my immediate vicinity. It's like they're sitting at the table next to me. Getting in and out, I'm like scooting around, trying to get out of the way, watching like my backpack. And it's like, I'm focused on too many other things to pay attention to what I'm trying to focus on. Made it difficult to work.
Yeah. I mean, I'm hypervigilant and I'm, you know, I'm on the autism spectrum. So those are factors. Mm-hmm. But I can't really work in particularly loud environments. Like, I can sometimes, if I have to, I can sleep in them. Like, I can sleep through car alarms and gunfire. I've lived in some rough areas, and I've also been in the military. But like, as far as working, especially like creative writing and whatnot, I need a, you know, relatively calm, quiet space. So usually like a room where I'm by myself, like my apartment, so to speak, that I live in now. Mm-hmm. It's more like a hotel room, and it's very small, but it works for me. And it's cheap. You can sometimes, if you have a library card, you can rent a study room where you can close a door, and if it's built properly, it's somewhat soundproof, so like you don't have to hear the ambiance. I mean, it's to be quiet anyway because it's a library, but you'd be surprised. So those can be helpful. And same thing, like, all the more so. Go ahead. You were going
to
say something?
I was going to say, I used to go to the library in town when I wanted to focus on some things, because it was not a mile from campus, but it was on the other side of town from campus, essentially. And I would go there, and they would, I forget if it was two or three stories. I definitely only went up to the second story, but yeah. I would go up there, and it was during the day in the middle of the week. So it was less busy. You know, the only people that would be there are like stay at home moms, I guess, with like their children or other people like myself who it's just, you know, people just focusing on using their laptops or just browsing stuff. You're not having the hustle and bustle of, you know, a lot of people on the weekends when they're off of work trying to do stuff. So it's, yeah. I would go up and I would sit in the local section because no one ever went there. It's like local records. Very few people ever use that, but even though like yeah. that was one of the things I actually found interesting, but it's neither here nor there, but I'd go and sit in that section. They had a little like a big thick leather chair. I would just sink down into it to the point where it's hard to get out of it. And I would plug my laptop in, sit there and work. It was so nice. So quiet, left to myself.
Yeah. Yeah. I find like certain sections, like the archive section or the microfiche, if they still have it, depending where you go, sections, like basically the sections where they have really old stuff that most people aren't even interested in. Those are like, exactly. And you can't take them out. You have to like read them while you're there or look at them while you're there. Those tend to be more quiet, and usually they're kind of like cordoned off, and there might be a door and somewhat soundproofed. Those can be nice to hang out in. But I also find that like university libraries tend to be like, you're going to get more people because like it's a school, like there's kids, quote unquote, who actively use them, as opposed to, depending where you go, a public library might be pretty dead certain times of day or certain areas. But even so, like the people who actually need and want to get work done, like they'll use a study room or they'll go to like those little places we mentioned. And so once you learn the layout, you can kind of get a sense of like, okay, that's how this works. And here's the Wi-Fi, here's this and that, you know, here's where the signal's better, blah, blah, blah. And so, yeah, I found those could be helpful, but like the whole going to a coffee shop and writing just has never been my thing. A coffee shop for me is a place where I go to sit, eat, use the bathroom, use the Wi-Fi, use the electricity. That's probably like the main thing is like, I unfortunately have been stuck with a run of phones and sometimes other devices that die on me. And also I'm a power user. So like, it's not like I'm doing them any favors with my own proclivities. And so like, if I just need to squeeze a juice before I get home, like I'll swing by a Starbucks or there's a coffee shop chain that was in the San Francisco, North San Francisco, Northern California area, San Francisco, and thereabouts. I forget what it's called, but it's like Jazz's or Jeff's or something like that. And like, I'd go there because it's similar to a Starbucks in that there'd be outlets, there'd be tables, there'd be Wi-Fi, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I can't really work there because, you know, there's no like noise rules. Like people tend not to be too loud, but yeah, it's just like, it's not really, it's a social environment. And like, that's the other thing. It's like anything else, like whether it's a gym, a library, a coffee shop, there's a social aspect, which people sometimes go to those places for. And like, I'm not like that as well. Like, I don't really go to these places to hang out or to socialize. I go to them to get something done. I go to the gym to work out or, you know, learn/practice martial arts. I go to the library to read, study, maybe get some work done. I go to a coffee shop, like for the reason I just told you. And I don't really, like, talk to people there, but other people are different. Other people are like, this is where I hang out with my friends, man. Yeah, I got my gym bros and da da da. It's like, all right, to each their own. But yeah, that's just never been me.
Yeah. Going back to the actual script writing, are there films that you look to for inspiration in the vein of like the style of writing that you're going for?
So yes and no. You have to be careful, US and one. We have to be careful not to allow ourselves to be too heavily influenced by our influences or by, you know, our predecessors, those who've come before, because there's this thing, especially in the comedy world, of like, you know, such and such babies, like Attell babies, Chappelle babies, you know, so there's probably Tarantino, mm-hmm. there's a lot of Tarantino babies, Whedon babies, Sorkin babies. Mm-hmm. And you have to be careful not to fall into the pattern of just being like someone that you've read or seen. So I'm careful to avoid that. But at the same time, I get the question sometimes, like, I certainly heard other people get the question, like, who are your influences? Who do you look up to? This and that. And I want to have like a fairly thoughtful, coherent, literate answer. I can't say, you know, nobody, A, because it's not true. You know, I don't know the name of the people or the things that have influenced me. I know that like there's some derivation, there's some like something that's driving me to write the way I write, you know, draw the way I draw, et cetera, et cetera. But I just try to focus in on drawing from me, myself, treating myself as like the wellspring. And mm-hmm. I allow myself to be influenced when I'm not directly writing. So like when I'm just relaxing, hanging out, and consuming content, as they say these days, I will like watch movies, listen to podcasts, read books, read comics, etc. And I'll allow those things to influence me in those moments. But then when I actually sit down and write, and also recently I've been trying more to write comics scripts, which is a whole other kettle fish. So I don't know if we'll get into that, but like it's its own animal, and it can be, has its own challenges, and the industry is something else in good and bad ways. But I'll just like sort of lean on myself, because the other thing, especially these days, and you probably are aware, you know, plagiarism is a big concern, but also just like not even plagiarism per se, like you're copying this particular person, but just like being too derivative or being too sort of samey looking or sounding can be a problem, because worst comes to worst, you could be accused not of like you copied, you know, blah blah blah, you copied this name author, this name screenwriter, you copied AI, or you just made this off of AI. It's like I get a lot of like, going back to comics side, I get like a lot of digital artists, not a lot, but like more than you'd think, digital artists in the online space getting, having to deal with accusations of using AI, more so even sometimes than like writers, where you would think like, oh, you know, you used AI to help write your term paper, you used AI to help write your website. Like that, those things obviously do happen, but you'll get people who will say like, you used AI in this like comic book panel or this comic book cover, and or just like you used AI for this Twitter post without, you know, like you said it was your art, but it's not. And it's like, that's very not just frustrating, it's very kind of, it could be like a death knell. I don't want to put too fine a point on it, but it can be like a really damning accusation that it's almost hard to disprove. You can't, you know, just prove a negative. So I try to be less influenced by my influences during the writing process, but then allow myself to know what they are before the fact and after the fact, if that makes sense. So it's like, I'll go in saying like, I have an outline. I know what the genre roughly is going to be. And I trying to know where I'm going to, you know, go with the story. Some people are very detailed with their outlines, beat by beat, scene by scene. I'm not quite that detailed, but I try to have something. But then on the actual process, and I just type, write. And then when it's done, or, you know, it's at a good stopping point, then I might look at it and compare to other stuff I've written, other stuff other people have written, and see like what I can modify to make it, I feel like, pop, if that makes mm-hmm. sense. But in the moment, yeah, I'm not actively trying to sound like anybody except myself. And I would say I'm actively trying not to let myself be too influenced or derivative, because again, I don't want it to seem, at best, it'll seem like I'm trying to sound like that person, which is like not the best. It's not the worst, but not the best. Because mm-hmm. some people, you know, get accused of like, oh, you're trying to be Sorkin, or you're trying to be Whedon, ugh. Or at worst, they'll be like, you just copied them, dude. Or like you just like you just ripped him off. Or, you know, like you just used AI to sound like him. It's like, oh, no, no, that didn't happen. That didn't happen. I promise. It's all me. It's all me. So.
Here's a question for you regarding the AI side of things. Mm-hmm. In my mind, whenever I see AI generated writing, I'll just use it in the most general sense, writing. It seems like super easy to spot. And I get it. Like, you can definitely touch it up. You can have it generate it and then just go back through and touch it up to make it sound less AI generated. Mm-hmm. But I get that it's impacting people's jobs for sure. It definitely is. Like, how effective do you think AI actually is in writing and generating content that people can use? Or is it just expediting the process immensely?
Sure. Yeah. So we've had discussions about this, me and some of my friends in the industry, and I've also just like listened to what other people say out in the ether. I don't know if there's certain people who are kind of like more known quantities in, let's say, like screenwriting industry, because they have more of an outsized voice. They talk more, they have podcasts, whatever. Craig Mazin is one example. I don't know that he probably has, but I don't follow him as closely. I don't actually like listen to script notes. So I don't know if he's had like any big, things to say about AI per se, but the vibe is basically, certainly like the vibe from the WGA, the Writers Guild, has been, we don't want to use AI and we don't want to be forced to use AI. And we don't want AI to be used without our consent. That's been a line for both the writers and the actors. Like, we don't want AI to be used without our consent. We don't want AI to be used just on the whim or the say-so of the producers or what have you, or the studio. And so there is some provision to allow for AI to be used with consent. And there's some feeling that, again, like you said, it can be used as a tool. There's some people, especially, I would say, less involved, less knowledgeable people on the outside who think like, oh yeah, I can just go to ChatGPT and it'll whip up something brilliant, and then like, sorry, you guys, you wish you have a job. It's like, yes and no, mostly no. like you said, you can kind of tell when it's artificial, and that's a key word. There's an uncanny valley aspect to things that are generated by a computer, whether art or text or what have you. And when you go and you polish it and you refine it, but a person looks at that and then like turns it into something, that's kind of like taking, it's not like saying taking coal and turning it into a diamond, but it's like taking like raw materials to make moissanite and then making moissanite. Like, it's not as simple as I told the AI to make something and then I spent 30 minutes or less just copy editing and then it was done. Like, no, you had to like really go in there and like really refine it to make it into a thing. And that work that you did, that makes it yours to a decent. And again, that's, I can't say how many people are doing that, but I would say it's probably almost certainly a minority, probably a small minority at that, percentage wise. I wouldn't be a guess, but I would say it's not super common. And then, as far as like the concern of it, yeah, we're more concerned with like someone's going to say to themselves, the less, I would say, knowledgeable people who sometimes unfortunately have decision-making power are going to say like, we can do it. Like, they, like we could use this instead of a person, and then they'll use it and it'll look and sound like shit. Like, you see that with websites sometimes, you see that with like AI chatbots, and they don't care.
For sure.
Like, they're not necessarily, and they're not end users. Like, not, they're not the people actually using these things or looking at these things on the consumer side. They're just kind of looking at the spreadsheets and the finances or whatever. But as an end user myself, as someone who's dealt with chatbots, who's looked at AI generated like scripts and copy and whatnot, yeah, it's not good. I would say I'm not worried. Mm-hmm. We actually got into a bit of a discussion. I got into a bigger discussion with this. Actually, I was going to say it was in person, but it was actually on Reddit last night with some people, and I said like there's a lot of value to the whole like be yourself message that people often push, and that is true and that is going to help people, but there's a more important, in my opinion, thing that people need to lean into if they feel so inclined to feel comfortable. Some people may not be comfortable, and that's, I think, why I got pushed back on, because I got basically, like, not downvoted into oblivion, but I got downvoted when I said this. But it's like, the more important message is be great. Like, be original, absolutely, but mm-hmm. be great. And you should, like, look at this, look at your creative pursuits. I look at it kind of like prize fighting, honestly. Like, I look at it as like, and I mean, you know, I've been homeless, I've been poor, I'm still, you know, kind of barely keep my head above water these days. Like, I'm the child of poverty, the child of two black sheep and my family, and we generally have not had a lot of money. And so I'm looking at this as like a way to keep myself above water, to pay my rents, to keep my, you know, stomach full, blah, blah, blah. And I'm also looking at it as like, this is my legacy. So it's not just like, oh, hey, I'm doing this and I'm a hero for fun, as they say in One Punch Man. Like, I'm doing this for fun. I'm doing this because I like it. Like, I like it, but I'm doing this because, like, I need to do this. If I don't do this, I literally will be on the street and poor and homeless and whatever. So, and again, I'm looking at it as my legacy. Like, I'm looking at it as I want to be a Tarantino. I want to be a Sorkin. I don't necessarily want to be a Whedon because, you know, for any number of reasons, but I want to be like a famous, well regarded name in the industry. Mm-hmm. And so when you have that beyond just the whole like having a voice and knowing who you are and being unique, when you have a push to be great, that's going to overcome a lot of the issues, in my opinion, in regards to AI or replaceability or whatever. Because it's like, you're not, you know, Craig Mazin, go back to him. You're not going to say like, I can get an AI to give me a Craig Mazin script. I can get an AI to run a TV room where Craig Mazin can run like Chernobyl or The Last of Us or whatever. Like, it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And that's really what you need to be. You need to be irreplaceable. And you're not necessarily going to get there just by being yourself. You're going to get there by being yourself, who is also great and a bankable name. And so that's what I focus on. It's like, I want to be myself, but a bankable name who people look at and they say like, oh my God, that's a Quinn Q. I got to have that. And so that's really what I lean into. It's just like, I can't be replaced because I'm just that good. And that sounds a little arrogant. That sounds a little maybe uncomfortable for people because some people just don't like being weighed and measured. Don't like being judged.
For sure.
And especially in the arts. So it's like, what? Or they don't like the whole thing of like, we're in competition. Like, oh, you know, there's a podium, you know, there's third place, there's second place, and there's first place. And it's like, I'm going for that gold every time. It's like, no, I'm happy to be nominated. Like, no, I'm not. Like, I don't necessarily want Oscars or, you know, awards per se, but I want people to think of me as like, this guy could get first prize. This guy's a prize fighter. Right. This guy is like, he's going for something every time he puts himself out there. And like, when you go into it like that, you're not really... I don't feel I have as much to worry about from AI or even other humans, because at the end of the day, I'm hungry and I'm going to stay hungry until I get fed, basically.
Yeah. I think I've mentioned it on the show before. I did a test with an AI program where I just wanted to create a short story with it just to see how it read, like a more long form version of it. Because I've read like very short snippets from AI, and even that's not great. So I did one where it was like, I mean, I'm talking like 5 pages in a Google Doc, and it can't, the problem with like generative AI is it can't remember what it's already put out. So it doesn't make sense, right? Like it, every new bit of every new prompt is quote unquote original content in the sense of it's not connected specifically to the previous bit. So
it's not serialized.
It'll change characters' names. It'll be like, oh, you know, the story I had it make up was a panda looking for its family in the jungle, and it ran into like a hunter, and they're like, oh, it's, you know, there's a black panther in this cave or whatever, and that I might be getting some of the details wrong. I literally read over it once just to see what it did, but like essentially, it's like, oh, the, you know, they got attacked by the panther, and then like two sentences later, it's like, oh, the panda bear and the hunter were happy to have survived the attack by the lion. It's like, no, it was a panther. What are you talking about? And then like it just doesn't follow very well. And so you would have to do so much original work to make it make sense. and it doesn't seem productive. My mindset is like the hype around AI is bigger and more impactful than the actual AI itself. Because
you also have people
probably seen stores. Go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, but I was going to say, this will be quick. I can be vocal. This will be quick, I promise. You also have people, I think, AI evangelists who have a vested interest and a certain degree of motivated reasoning around the technology and around the space to where they want it to be true. It's like, you know, you talk to people who are big into, let's say, like UFOs or aliens or, you know, the paranormal. It's like they want it to be true. I want to believe. So, when you have those people also talking at this stuff, they'll talk about it. Like it can do the wonders. It can do whatever, you know, you think it can, or we worry it can, even though it can't. Mm-hmm. And so you have those people against like the people who've actually used it and also work in those industries. And it's like, no, it really can't. Like you could try, but it's not going to be good. So
there's a lot of startups now too, that are AI driven. Cause it's like a buzzword, right? Mm-hmm. Like I know in my industry, we've looked at a lot of companies where it's like outreach, right? Where it's how do we optimize our outreach to be as efficient as possible with marketing campaigns and whatnot? And it's like, or business to business, where it's like you're trying to get in touch with other businesses to sell your products to them and have them retail it for you.
Yeah.
And there's so many options now where it's just these startups that have literally come into existence within the last year. Where it's like, oh, AI outreach, where the AI will generate all the information for you and get it over to you. It's so much quicker and easier. And it's like, okay, a lot of times it's wrong. It's just not accurate. Like, it's like 60% accuracy at best a lot of times.
Sure.
And then a lot of it's outdated. Yeah. Like, it's accurate, but not even for the time. Like,
the data set is based off of old stuff because there's like a... there's like a window where it can only go up to a certain point. Like, you know, I think ChatGPT famously could only go back to a certain point in terms of its or up to
which
a certain point.
Which I think they updated that to be fair at this point.
Exactly, exactly. But like as an example, right? Yeah. So you got all those problems.
Like one of the things that the company ended up going with one version of it, and there's like a Google Chrome extension. So like as you're browsing the internet, it's constantly there. And as you go to websites, it'll pull the contact information for the website.
Bard is the Google one, right? Is that Bard? B-A-R-D, Bard?
Yeah, I think you're correct, yeah.
Yeah, or but Gemini.
This is a third-party like AI outreach app that I was referring to, though. And you go to a website, and it shows you like their contact information. And I was like, let me try this out. So I go to my own website, and it's not accurate. Right. It has like old emails on there. I'm like, some of these people haven't been here in years. These emails don't exist anymore. And clearly not updated. And how would they know? Right. To be fair, how would they know these emails aren't in existence anymore? They just, the way it pulls it is, this was an email address that was once used with this website. It doesn't know that it's been deleted because there's no way for it to know. And so you have a lot of issues like that with people who are no longer with companies and things like that. But going back more to the writing side of it, or just the art side of it in general, even with like AI image generators, there's still a lot of issues with it. But even then, so there's this battle. I had an argument with a guy a couple weeks ago about AI artists as a title. And he said like, oh, this is the prompt I use and this is what it generated. And I replied to him using an image that I generated with the exact same prompt. And he's like, you can't do that. I own the rights to that. I'm like, you don't own the rights to this prompt. That's not how it works. You don't.
Although you say that, that's actually something I think that GPT, the company that makes it, Sam Altman's company.
OpenAI.
There you go. OpenAI. They're actually like, there's something where they're trying to make prompts be like things that you can sort of monetize or like set aside, like, oh, this is my prompt and I own this kind of thing. Like the equivalent
of... There's just
of,
no way. There's no
the
way.
The equivalent of your own like custom, like costume set for a character in an avatar in like a game or something. But yeah, like you said, this is just realistically, it's not doable. Yeah,
all the NFTs.
There's
and
definitely
stuff
people who are trying to. Yeah. Oh, yeah. NFTs are a whole other kettle of fish. Oh, my God. Like, yeah. I was going to say, AI is new crypto. That's the other thing is like, it's always something. There's always going to be that next thing. And it's unfortunately, it's always going to be kind of just air to some extent, just kind of like empty, vacuous. Not always, but very often it seems. And I think it's also because you have like a combination of dumb money trying to chase something. You have a combination mixed with like people who, this is especially the case like last decade and a little bit before, of like zero rate phenomenons. Like we had like interest rates, I guess, like all kinds of complicated financial stuff. Basically, like because you couldn't make as much money doing the standard stuff of like putting capital into something and then getting back interest or rent because interest rates were so low after the housing market crash and whatnot. What people started to do, and also because money was being lended so much more cheaply in that environment, what people started to do was just like park money into weird business ideas, usually coming out of Silicon Valley, that they thought would eventually become market leaders or, you know, monopolies unto themselves. Like the idea was Uber would eventually just own rideshare, would kill taxis and then just own this whole category they sort of invented by themselves. That didn't necessarily happen, but I have been told. We can now inform you.
Have it on good authority.
We have it on good authority that Uber has finally turned a profit. I believe in 2020 or 2022. Fairly recently, but they did turn a profit. But like several Silicon Valley companies, several tech companies, several social media companies are not profitable to this day. Reddit is not profitable to this day. I believe Twitter is not profitable to this day. It has had periods where it's turned to profit.
Is definitely not profitable.
Well, yeah, these days, especially for a number of reasons, it's not profitable to this day. But like, there at points where it was going to get there. But like, yeah, Reddit's not profitable. Twitter's not profitable. Facebook is, but for a number of potentially insidious reasons. I don't know if Instagram actually is profitable. Probably is, because, you know, again, Meta. But like, I don't think Snapchat is profitable. I think I'm almost positive it's not. I don't know if TikTok is profitable, maybe, probably not, because also they have to. Twitch is not profitable, which it doesn't blow my mind when you look at the numbers. When you look at the numbers, it's like obvious why it's not profitable, but like it's not. It's like very much not profitable, and that's a kind of a unfortunate sticking point with them. Their business model does not seem to work. YouTube has not officially given numbers, but I believe it's become profitable since Premium. And also because like Google's been tightening the screws, and it would seem Google/Alphabet, and it would seem unlikely they would keep running it at a loss like this many years in. But yeah, there's so many of those businesses, again, like Silicon Valley tech companies, that just don't make money, but they started at a time where that was just the thing to do, and now you have like a number of other things where lesser brands that started in that same business model and they've just died off. Like, that's what happened with WeWork. That's what happened with like certain companies that would drop off your laundry. Like this company called Rinse, you drop off your laundry and they wash it for you. They deliver it back to your house. And it's like, in theory, that seems like a decent enough like business. But for some reason, with all the Silicon Valley nonsense, it just wasn't profitable. It just started out not making money. It has not turned a profit since it's being founded. It's probably like 5 or 6 years old, and they're like, we're still going to run this. You know, the rates went up. The financial markets are different now. Like, we actually can't keep like being your corporate sugar daddy. That's a thing I don't often say this, because I don't often talk about these things in terms of like my sort of public discourse. But in my mind, I often think about like corporate sugar daddies. Like, again, going back to comics, DC Comics and Marvel are comic book companies. They're, you know, publishers. They're relatively small in terms of their footprint in their given spaces and in like publishing writ large and in sort of like the financial aspect of media in general. Like, the amount that they contribute to the bottom lines of Disney and Warner Brothers Discovery respectively is almost non-existent. They are profitable. They officially are profitable, but they're not like making buku bucks. And so they're essentially like the sugar baby companies of their corporate superiors. And it's like so many companies basically just exist because a larger company subsidizes them. Amazon and Google are, you know, pretty obvious examples of that. And it's just like, at a certain point, you can't keep running businesses like this. You can't just be a corporate sugar baby for the rest of your life. It's not going to work. Twitch will eventually have to turn a profit or close its doors because Jeff or whoever takes over, I think Jeff is already technically retired, so somebody else took over, I think, last year. But whoever like is running Amazon is going to be like, yo, you can't keep losing billions of dollars a year. We can't do this. We gotta tighten the screws. But such is life. That's above my pay grade. I just write the stories. I can't balance the books. I wish I could, but say
living. One of the things people wonder a lot too, especially with like video game companies, which is more my area of expertise, and why they make such strange decisions, where it's like we got to go all in. We got, and you know, if we don't make if, like penny pinching, right? Where it's like, we need to lay off as many employees as we can, make as much money as we can right now, regardless of our long-term strategy. And people are like, this doesn't make any sense from a business perspective. But the reason they do that is because they're beholden to the shareholders who are not in it for the long-term. They don't care about they are there to make money, cash out, and then they do not care about the company in the long-term. And people seem to forget that
in the arts too. They're all the arts technically. Video games is an entertainment industry, but like it's the same in like movies. It's the same in comics. It's like, why do companies like have variant covers, which is a really kind of silly when you think about it, and you look at it, it's a very kind of silly concept in itself, and just a very silly thing to have as a significant part of your profit, quote unquote, but they have it, and it makes up anywhere from 20-40% of publishers' profit in a given quarter. And it's like it's there because it makes the company a lot of money fast, even if it's cheesy and even if it's not sustainable. And then they can say like, oh, you know, daddy, we made money today, and you know that satisfies them for a quarter or whatever. Or, you know, why is Warner Bros. Discovery and Zaslav, why are they doing all those stupid things they're doing? Well, again, makes money in the short term. Like, Zaslav's going to have his filet mignon, and his buddies, you know, at the board are going to make sure that they can say we had a, you know, good quarter, and they're balancing the budgets. And to some extent, you can almost understand where they're coming from, because the history of Warner Brothers and Warner Media as a conglomerate is a sordid and really frustrating and stupid one for a number of reasons, and all the debt that they've taken on, like they have to do something. But it's just like when you get to the point where you can't even be good stewards of the brands that you own, where you can't even like be good stewards of, you know, Batman and DC Comics, and that's actually kind of how it works. Like it's Batman and everybody else, unfortunately. But when you can't be good stewards of DC, and you can't be good stewards with like the Looney Tunes, and like you can't release movies that you've already finished making, like you finished making them, but you're like, nah, we're just not gonna release it. We're just gonna write it off for taxes and make money that way. It's like what? It's like, what are we even doing here? Like, what's the point of running Warner Brothers, of running this entertainment empire, all these storied brands, and being like, in my opinion, like, again, I'm not paid to do these things. Like, admittedly, I'm speaking out of my ass on this to some extent, but it's like, if I was in that position, one of the reasons why I would be in that position is because I would think is to be a steward of those brands, to be, you know, to do brand management. Brand management for DC is like, we're going to kick Marvel's ass. We're going to sell more. We're going to be more profitable on the comic side. We're going to be more successful on the comic side. We're going to be more of the like iconic brands and names and characters that people know of when they think about it. And that was the case for actually a decent amount of time before like the MCU hit big. Like for a long time, the most famous superheroes were actually on the DC side. People didn't really know most of the Marvel characters except for like Spider-Man, Hulk, and like maybe one or two others. That's changed since the 2000s and the 2010s, obviously. But like, you should be a steward of those brands and make sure those maintain, make sure those are like well received and well regarded in the public sphere, and then and also making you money. Like it's mutually inclusive. It's like if you can make sure that every character in the Justice League has a successful comic book, has a good Q score, and people want to see their movies, that makes you money. But again, that's long-term thinking versus just like, oh shit, Superman is bad at the box office. Let's not make any more Superman movies. And let's make sure we make Batman movies. And let's make sure we make Batman comics and variant covers and blah, blah, blah. And let's make sure the balance, the budget is balanced, not balanced, but the budget is, the quarter looks good so that we all get our bonuses at the end of the year. And it's like, fuck the rest. It's like, oh God, I don't know if you can curse on this. Apologies. But
it's fine. Yeah, like I said, when you start to view businesses as like decisions from the lens of, will this make shareholders short-term money? And that's why they make, like, when you start to look at it that way, the decisions they make make a lot more sense. Because it's like, okay, no, sure, that would make them money short-term. That makes sense why they did that. They don't have a long-term plan in mind because they aren't allowed to. Yeah.
Unfortunately.
And it's disheartening. Yeah. But it's a real mess.
The way of the world, unfortunately. All we can do is try to carve out our own little niches within it and hope that people join us for the ride. That's basically what I try to do. Like, at my own level, I just try to create something and hopefully people will join me for the ride, especially like when it comes to my nonfiction work. Like, I've done a bit of nominal, very, very nominal journalism. And one of the articles that I'm most proud of that's on my Substack, it's technically paywalled right now, but I'll probably just make it permanently free, is about the history of Twitter verification. Because there have been other articles about that. There's an article for it about Wikipedia, of course, but like mine, if I can toot my own horn for a second, it's, I would say, the most complete and the most, it's somewhat, you know, it's somewhat opinion, but it's like, I'd say the most honest and fair, because you'll have people talk about like, oh, you know, Twitter sucks now and Elon, blah, blah, blah. And oh, you got to pay for a check mark and that's lame. And it's like, okay. If you actually like, and I'd encourage people to like look it up. If you actually like look into what verification was created for, like why it was created, like literally why it started, and then what it has been throughout the history of the program, and then what it became under Elon, you would see that it's not like this case of, oh, it was this perfect thing that was completely benign and totally above board, and then Elon fucked it. Like, that's not what happened. But the other problem
is, I lost my verification once he took over. I was a bit disappointed.
Wah, wah, wah. You were verified? Really?
Yeah. I was. I don't care. Currently, I don't care. I was like, ah, dang, I lost it.
Oh, well. So were you verified as like Dead Jester, or were you verified as yourself?
Both, actually. Because I was verified as the Dead Jester Productions account because it was the brand account, and then myself because I owned Dead Jester Productions.
Oh, okay. So if I may, and obviously, like, you know, you pay and you probably just, you know, for whatever reasons you don't pay, and that's fine. I don't pay currently.
Yeah, I just refuse to pay. I'm not interested in paying to verify that I am myself.
Sure. I would pay if I had the money, and I have actually experimented with paying for verification. I used Twitter Blue, formerly Twitter Blue, now X Premium. I've used it before. I would use it again if I had the money. At a certain point, they actually, like, similar to other sort of like partner programs on like various platforms like Twitch and like YouTube, they'll start paying you if your tweets are quote unquote like valuable enough and making enough ad rev. They'll pay you out of the ad rev. Ostensibly, that's what they say. Anyway, they say that it's paying you out of the ad rev. I've heard like rumbles that the financials don't actually make sense, and they're kind of like paying you out of a slush fund that's tangentially related to ad rev. But regardless, there are people for whom basically they're being paid by Twitter to have a blue check mark by their name. It's kind of funny. But I'm not polarized. That's the thing. Like, I wrote the article because there are these people who are, no offense to you or anybody else, but per se, but there are these people who are like polarized, almost in a culture war sense, not even almost, like really in a culture war sense, against the idea of paying for verification. And it's just like, that's stupid. It's a subscription service. Like, I'm not against paying for Netflix or YouTube or Hulu or whatever.
Part of it is the security reason too. people are unlikely to pay for verification, you know, over time. Like if you like, let's say I'm pretending to be, you know, Chick-fil-A or something, and it's like, I make a fake Chick-fil-A account. It like if they realize, oh, I'm not actually Chick-fil-A, they'll ban me. The odds of me continuing to try and pay over and over and over again to get verified every time drop exponentially. If I'm able to just convince someone I'm Chick-fil-A and get verified for free, I'm way more likely to retry doing that over and over again because I don't have any risk involved. It's the same thing with like the way they ban cheaters in video games and things like that, where it's like, you're not going to buy the game over and over and over again just to cheat. Like you have a limited amount of money in most cases. Most people aren't able to spend $70 five times every time they get caught cheating. Like it,
right.
You know
right,
what I mean? Right. Like it's a slight security feature and you're paying for other benefits besides the little blue check mark next to your name, which I think at this point isn't even verification. I think the verification one is gold, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
I think they have a couple different ones. I think they have a gray sort of black one or something as well.
Again, you should read my article. I go into that among other things for sure. But basically, gold is for companies. So blue is just like a general verification. So blue is for everybody. Blue is for individuals, ostensibly, or just like smaller brands. Gold is for established companies. So like if you can verify, quote unquote, verify, if you can establish that it's a business and it's a corporate entity, not just a single dude, then you'll get a gold one. And then gray or silver, it's really more gray, is for government entities. So like the president, you know, Joe Biden gets gray. The, you know, White House gets gray. Warner Brothers Discovery gets gold. Who's a celebrity? That's a good example. Most athletes still have their blue check marks either because they paid for them or because they got grandfathered. There's another thing, like there's a number of accounts that actually got grandfathered. They don't actually have to. This is like unofficially, like not unofficially, it's just like an open secret that there are certain accounts that got grandfathered in that don't pay but just have their check marks as is. It's not a comprehensive list, I think, of that, but they said they were doing it for like 7,000 or some odd accounts. I forget the exact number. And so like you'll see there's like an account for some old like Eddie Murphy movie that was verified back in like 2015 and then it just kept its verification for free in perpetuity. But yeah, like Eddie Murphy as an example. I don't think he has a Twitter account, but if he did, it'd be verified as blue. Andrew Schultz, blah, 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 Joe Rogan, whatever. It's a subscription service with a number of features, including, like you said, you know, security, potential security benefits. And there's pros and cons to it. But people who just get negatively polarized against it for like political reasons, I think, are very short-sighted. But that's just unfortunately another part of like life, modern life, is like people make decisions or judgments on things and other people based on incomplete information or just like cultural signals from celebrities or their friends, and they don't really think things through. That's another thing that I have been very frustrated by, like in addition to like corporate malfeasance and poor brand management. It's like, oh, you think that paying for Twitter is quote unquote stupid because you were told that by somebody you follow on Twitter or somebody who you're friends with in person who just hates Elon Musk. Great. That's a really like valuable opinion that you have by virtue of someone else having it. It's like, all right. Anyway.
Fair enough. It is what it is.
It is what it is.
People get way too worked up about things that other people do that don't affect them at times.
That too, for sure. I try not to. We're all guilty of that to some extent. I try not to, and I try to just like let live. I would say going back,
I don't have
to
time to care what other people are mad about.
Oh, I have time. Well, I just dripped into a bit of a Dennis Reynolds thing. I have time. No, but I do.
You're like, I'll make the time to be upset. Don't worry.
Yeah, exactly. I'll make time. But no, I will say like, I don't get too, I would say It depends on the thing, and I usually let it go, especially if it's not something that directly affects me or it's not someone in my immediate sphere. It's like, I'll get really worked up about someone in my building doing something stupid and just being annoying. And like, I have to see that person, if not every day, then certainly like multiple times a week. That's one thing. But yeah, it's like somebody has a bad opinion on Twitter, or somebody says something I don't like, you know, on the news, like that's whatever. It's more when it directly affects me or when I think that it has like really significant effects in life in general. It's like, I can get worked up about Zaslav and Warner Bros. Discovery because I'm a DC guy. I'm a Warner Bros. guy. I'm a DC guy. Like, there was a time in my life where I very nearly would have worked in some regard for or with that company. And it's like, now I have to write them off. It's like, I'm basically Chris Nolan. Like, again, not with the money and the clout and the prestige, but it's like, no pun intended. He wanted that's one of his prestige. But it's like, I basically can't work with them. They haven't like sworn me off, and I haven't sworn them off in any like official capacity, but I've literally, a number of other screenwriters and, you know, entertainment people have said like, we can't work for Warner Bros. Discovery because we literally can't be sure that our stuff's gonna get released or not fucked with, or, you know, not screwed over on the back end in terms of like streaming and whatnot. So it's just like, and that sucks because I would love to like work with them and work with those characters and those IP. People are like, IP? You want to work IP? Yeah, I want to work with IP. I'd love to work on a Harry Potter. I'd love to work on a DC Comics film or TV show. But it's just like, not now. Not when I'll like spend, you know, 6 months to a year or more on it. And then they'll say like, we're not releasing it. We're going to write it off for taxes. You know, fuck off. It's like, what? So that's where I get worked up on. But the other stuff, like, Joe Rogan made a really Joe Rogan said something shitty about Destiny. All right, whatever. You know, Candace Owens and Ben Shapiro are fighting. Okay, who cares? You know, but people care. But I'm like, I have more important things, or I have other internet bullshit to worry about. I can let that internet bullshit fall to the wayside.
Fair enough. Yeah, I don't have time to worry about it. I don't have time to follow things enough to form an educated opinion on it. You know, like, it, I'm not the type to just look at somebody and react immediately. What's that?
Do you read the, literally, I was talking to somebody like last week, another host, and he's like, I don't even read the news, man. Like, I watch Don Lemon and Anderson Cooper on mute in a bar, and I'm just like, I like that. I like the cut of his jib. I like the way he looks. He's a smart, dressed, you know, like, handsome guy, but he has no idea about anything going on as far as like news or politics. Like, he talks to his friends about things.
Okay. For sure.
You don't watch anything.
But like, I have headlines that go like by on the side, and I scan the headlines. I don't read them, but then I'm also I make it a point to not then regurgitate that as though it's fact, because I understand that headlines are meant to be, you know, clickbait.
Are you saying that clickbait exists? That people might not be entirely accurate or honest in what they say to make you read something versus what is actually in the substance of the thing that you clicked on?
Yeah, the way I work is like, I wait, like, if I see one that doesn't read like clickbait, where it's like, hey, this is a thing that's happening, and it's like, okay, maybe I'll read up on that later. But especially in politics, you know, it's like, oh, Biden did this, this is crazy. Trump did this, it's crazy. It's
that. Like, yeah.
I'm just like, who knows what the actual truth is in that regard? Because there's no way I'm going to get it from headlines. It's
absolutely,
it's so much of it's just opinion as well. So it's not even factual.
Yep.
So I'm like, it's not worth investing the time into it at that point. I'm like, when I get the time, I'll read up on something that's actually worthwhile, but I'm not going to waste my time reading opinion pieces on a lot of times nothing, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's like, this person thinks that this is terrible, and here's, that's the worst thing.
They
is when
said
they tell you what your opinion should be. I hate when they tell you what your opinion should be in the headline, where it's like, so-and-so did this, here's why you should be upset. It's like, you know, I should be able to form my own opinion, not have your headline tell me how I should feel about
ideally, that'd be nice. But yes.
I don't know. It is what it is. I leave it for other people to sort out. But anyway, I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to touch on here before we
kind of went all over the place.
Went all over the place, had some technical issues, started late. Yes. That was my fault.
it's quite a podcast, and it's gonna drop with a pretty quick turnaround.
Gonna be so much fun to edit this in such a short time span.
Oh yeah, yeah. Look forward to that. There you go. There's your next however many appointments. To wrap up again, I'm Quinn Q. My digital footprint, my handle is Edoquin, EDOKWIN. I would encourage people to go find me there. Go Google me, go find me on Twitter, go engage with me that way. I want engagements more than followers. Like, I don't even really care at this point if you follow me. Like, my number, I think also, this, if I could end on something, I would say, we're all people. We're all human beings. We all deserve, respect and decency. I actually really hate the degree to which people treat like the number next to your name on a like social platform or a website as being indicative of your value as a human being. It's like, oh, you're not ranked this level whatever, so you don't get like humanity privileges in a video game kind of thing. It's like, I'm a person. Like, don't treat me as a lesser being just because I don't have a special symbol next to my name or a check mark or a certain number of people, number of followers, whatever. But if you want to engage with me there, please do engage with me. I'd love to, at me.
At me, bro.
Exactly. Come at me. I love to have conversations. I love to, chop it up. I love to talk about, popular culture, news, stuff of that nature. I'm trying to focus in more on like the arts and writing, because for a long time I just kind of backslid into talking a lot of politics and stuff, which is not bad, but it's like, I'm not trying to be the next Joe Rogan or the next Destiny. I'm trying to be the next me, which is probably more of a Tarantino-esque with shades of like Bill Finger. He's a comic book writer. Kurt Busiek and stuff like that. Like, I'm trying to be a creative person. So I can talk politics, but I prefer to talk about like cool movies or TV shows or comic books, stuff of that nature. And that's really what I would encourage people to do. So it's like, go out, consume content, watch TV, watch movies, talk to people as human beings, have real conversations like the one we had just now, you and me, Josh, because the worst thing you can do as a person, in my opinion, is not engage with life in a meaningful way. Just like go through the motions, treat people as disposable or non-existent, not think about things, be on autopilot. So like, please think and act and like be a person. If I could say anything, it's just like, be a person, and at me on Twitter.
Very well said. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on, man. I really do appreciate it. It was a fun time chatting. I'm sorry we had so many issues. This is a, like I said, it's a cursed episode. It is what it is, but it was a fun time.
It won't be cursed until someone dies 7 days after listening to it. Then it'll be cursed.
Yes. Yes, it'll be a, I don't know how they say podcasts in Japanese. It's like Ringu, but.
Yes, exactly.
I don't know. I'm not going to make some racist YouTube comment.
You don't have a YouTube, right? So yeah, you're not a YouTuber, but yeah, you're a podcaster. Anyway.
I'm going to assume that's incorrect, but. but no, thank you so much for coming. I really do appreciate it. It was a great time. Happy to have you on. And thank you everyone for listening. It's been episode 221. See you guys next time. Bye.
Bye.